Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy.
Live from Seahawks Training Camp.
On 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy. We are live from the VMAC watching Seahawks Training Camp Day 2. As a reminder, our training camp coverage presented by Precor Home Fitness. A lot of reactions, a lot of takeaways from day one, including some things we learned from Pete Carroll, the first to speak to reporters after practice. Right now, Curtis Rogers here with me, and Jake Heaps, who's been on paternity leave, going to be joining us in the final hour and then back tomorrow.
Has anybody's paternity leave ended mid-show? That's pretty wild. Like, how do you time that out?
Yeah, well, I think what it is that Jake could not stay away from news. Think about the week, right? You had the Mariners' incredible, unbelievable win over the Astros in a comeback. He couldn't stop texting us about it.
It's true.
Truly couldn't sleep.
It's
we
like
were getting texts at 1 a.m. in all caps. Yeah, Jake, go to bed. And then the next day he calls in saying he's Jake from University Place so he can talk about the game. And then today he's still on paternity leave and wants to make sure to get here in time for practice kicking off at 1:30.
Just turn his mic on in that 1 p.m. hour. Let him go.
Commercial-free, maybe? Here's what I'm hoping, that Jake brings Baby River. And Jake holding a baby in one hand and like his notebook in the other.
Yeah.
Mic in the other and just going to town, man. Just letting us know what we need to know about training camp. Until Jake gets here, I do have a few takeaways. I'm going to get to that later in the show, but we'll start with a couple of them here. Just so you guys know, a few sights and sounds from Renton headquarters. Guys all out right now for walkthroughs, basic stuff, and just a peek behind the curtain. Curtis and I having what I thought was a very analytical, a very important conversation about which Seahawks player, now that we're literally yards away from them, staring at all of them, would inflict the most bodily damage on us. Because all these guys are in crazy shape right now.
And we came to the consensus that it would be Dwayne Brown.
I think
who
that,
could
yes.
hit one of us and the other would collide into the other, taking us both out.
Cartoon-like.
Yes.
And then we would proceed to like be punched through the brick wall of the weight room behind us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like that's a fair takeaway. And that's really our first piece right here. But let's just not recap, but go over some the things that I saw yesterday. Now, the big storyline everyone's going to be following, and that's in and outside of Seattle, is Jamal Adams. We know that the deal isn't done yet. The one thing everyone was waiting to see, Curtis, is whether he'd be in the building. So we found out via Jacina Anderson had a report, and then also the Seahawks official Twitter account tweeted a photo of Jamal Adams in the building. So we knew he was in the facility yesterday.
We need that actual physical proof.
Yeah,
we needed it. Is he in front of our own eyes?
Picks or it didn't happen.
Exactly.
So the Seahawks said, yeah.
That could have been any old picture of Jamal Adams.
Can you imagine if they photoshopped like the SeaTac airport thing? Jamal Adams spotted at Seahawks headquarters.
My favorite joke of Seahawks Twitter is when there's a rumor of a player that could be on their way to Seattle, and somebody does a poor Photoshop of them in the SeaTac terminal.
I know.
Love it. Cannot get enough of it. I will laugh every single time at that.
He was, though, on the sidelines, and I don't blame him for not practicing. I wouldn't be practicing. And he was otherwise being involved, talking with teammates. A couple fans were yelling. He was waving back at fans. But let's hear what Pete Carroll had to say. Cut number one, this is what he says about Jamal Adams' contract.
The conversations have been ongoing for some time and been very amicable. He's in a good place. You know, they've worked really hard to this point. I'm very hopeful that it's going to get taken care of here very soon.
Stacey, what's your concern level with the Jamal Adams negotiations right now? Every time we have heard Pete Carroll talk, it just seems like things are going well on that front.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's lip service, or do you think things are actually going well?
I don't know how well they're going. I think they have to be going well enough for him to be here. I think Jamal Adams is someone that's clearly comfortable advocating for himself. And I think that if he didn't want to be here and want to be playing for the Seahawks, he wouldn't have even shown up to practice. Like, I think that's something he doesn't have to be doing right now. He has $9 million guaranteed to him for the rest of his career, and he's an all-pro. He is a top-tier level defensive back in the NFL who's coming off a great season with 9.5 sacks. I mean, him showing up is, I think, doing his part to say, I want to be here. Let's get this figured out. So that's what I'm taking away is when Pete says it's amicable, if it weren't, you wouldn't see him here.
No, you wouldn't. And I think I look back to the Bobby Wagner negotiations from a couple of years ago. Bobby showed up in a very similar situation, seeking a very lucrative deal. Ended up getting it partway through camp. I think that's what we're going to see here with the Jamal Adams deal. I don't think this is something that stretches into the regular season. I don't think this is something that stretches into week three of the preseason. I think this is something that gets done maybe within a week or two.
Now, and I hope it does. And just as a heads up, Pete Carroll added that Jamal probably wouldn't be practicing anyway. He's coming off of shoulder surgery, off of surgery for both hands. And while he's presumably healed, they wouldn't probably rush him back right away. So Brock Heward on Blue 42 with Danny and Gallant ahead of training camp even said, like, don't be shocked if he ends up on PUP list. That could be a possibility given that he is still nursing those injuries. You had two other players end up on PUP list, the Seahawks' second-round pick, Dwayne Eskridge, wide receiver, and Travis Homer. Based on what Pete Carroll had to say, it certainly sounds like Dwayne Eskridge is a little bit closer to being out here. Do you have any concern, Curtis? Because they've had a couple guys, a couple draft picks, first and second-rounders, end up on PUP to start the season. Very important distinction, PUP in training camp, where you can come off it at any time.
It just does not put me at ease. This is what, like the third or fourth year in a row this has happened?
It's very weird.
LJ Collier, Rashad Penny got injured in camp. Obviously, Daryl Taylor last year. Now Dwayne Eskridge. I mean, look, those guys, the three guys we mentioned before, got off to, you know, a stutter step to their career.
Yeah.
I want to see Dwayne Eskridge healthy in week one. I don't want to have to play the waiting game into the season where it's week five and we're saying, oh, when's Dwayne Eskridge going to practice? When's he going to be out there? I want to see him out there week one because you only had three draft picks this season.
Mm-hmm.
If only two of them are healthy heading into week one, that's not good. That's not something that I like to see.
It's also just a weird string of luck. I was talking to someone about this the other day who was telling me to keep an eye on Marquise Blair. Speaking of another player, second round pick drafted before DK Metcalf. And they have all the expectations in the world for him, all the belief in the world in him, and then had a freak torn ACL in week two. You can't predict that. You don't know what to expect with that. He's obviously back in camp working out with the guys. He was on the field yesterday, and he was, I believe, at OTAs as well. So far, I think the good news is that the guys that have missed time because of weird, fluky things, Daryl Taylor, Marquise Blair, recent picks these guys have made, they're both out here on the field.
They are. And mentioning those draft picks that have dealt with injuries in training camp, they're all independent of each other. It's not because there's something the Seahawks are doing. It's just bad luck.
It's bad luck.
It's the worst luck possible.
And it sounds like a cop-out, but there is no other way to connect Rashad Penny, who never had an injury in college, with getting a couple broken fingers, or Dwayne Eskridge with, said it was kind of like firing up a nagging toe injury during a routine jog. And they actually think that he could be even just a week away from being activated. So he sounds much closer than Homer, who they said they're going to be very patient with. But obviously, Dwayne Eskridge is who we're looking at as having more of an impact right away.
Oh, absolutely. He's going to be, hopefully, your number three wide receiver this season and give you a level of play that the Seahawks really didn't have out of that spot last year as we were playing the waiting game with Josh Gordon. When was he going to return to the lineup? He never did.
Yeah.
He got suspended by the NFL. This year, you make a draft pick in the second round on a difference-making wide receiver. You hope he can slot in and give you a level of explosiveness that we frankly never really saw out of David Moore when he was here, and he did an okay job of filling in that spot, but there was so much more that the Seahawks could have done last year offensively, and I think a lot of that had to do with the production they got out of that spot because teams near the end of the year really clamped down on Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. They didn't have the same kind of production they had at the beginning of the season. Hopefully Eskridge is okay, gets healthy, is back in the lineup, and can make defenses a little more honest against the Seahawks.
I'm really excited to see what he can do with his speed in Shane Waldron's offense, which we're only getting little tastes of in training camp. We're not going to see the totality of it. And I'll get to something Pete Carroll said about the run-pass balance with Shane Waldron's offense coming up later in the show that I think you guys are going to want to hear. Before we get to that, though, you know who else could snag that kind of third target receiver spot, though not a receiver, is someone from the tight end group. Now, Gerald Everett, the leading contender there, but Pete Carroll yesterday said, look, we aren't entirely sure yet who's going to get the bulk of those targets. We really like all the weapons we have.
He is very much somebody to keep an eye on because not only did he say that about Gerald Everett, earlier in the offseason he said, look, this is my breakout candidate for this offense this year. And, I mean, that's got to put a lot of Seahawks fans on alert here, especially out of the tight end position, which, as we talked about a couple days ago on the show, is a group that, since, you know, the greatest tight end in franchise history, Jimmy Graham, left after the 2017 season, it has left a lot to be desired. Gerald Everett comes in with experience in Shane Waldron's style of offense. I think that is a match made in heaven. And look, he's got a quarterback like Russell Wilson throwing to him this year. He's not got Jared Goff. He doesn't have John Wofford throwing to him. This is going to be a year where I think Gerald Everett takes off and puts the league on alert. I'm buying the hype, Stacey.
You're boarding that hype train?
I'm boarding the hype train, which we will get to later on today. I don't know if that's going to be one of the trains we're boarding, but I just made my own train. I am hopping on the Gerald Everett wagon.
Curtis, can I tell you something that, like, has nothing to do with the Seahawks, but just made me laugh?
Let's go.
A texter on the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710, did not know that Jake and Brooke named their new baby daughter River, and this texter was very excited because they just got a ferret and named it River. So they said, dope!
Look,
you know
it's
what?
A good name.
It's a solid name. Yeah. It's a solid name. And now you guys both have that in common. I think that's cool. Someone else says, how's Turf the dog looking this year? I don't see him right now. I did see him running around earlier.
It's hot out for a dog. You don't want to burn his little paws on the grass out here.
You know what?
It is beaming down.
I'm not taking it personally.
No.
But
that turf.
I've never pet turf before.
Really?
Yeah. And I feel like it's personal. You know what I mean?
He's a dog.
No, I know, but you know how sometimes dogs don't like people? Like, people will be like, oh, you know, my dog or my cat didn't like this person. Well, I mean,
I think that says more about you than does
I might be a little intimidating, is all I'm saying, to turf. I don't know, but it's been a couple years, and it's bothered me every single time. All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
All right, headline number one. The Mariners were blown out 11-4 in their series finale against the Astros. What is the real headline?
On the plus side, at least the Mariners didn't just give the Astros the best reliever on their team. Oh, no.
Well, hey now.
I know you like Paul Sewald, too. You know, here's the thing.
I love Paul Sewald.
I'll say this about the Mariners. If there was one area where they had a few extra pieces of talent, it was going to be their bullpen. Shockingly enough, on the flip side, their bullpen is a big part of the reason that they are where they are record-wise.
Absolutely.
So you worry that, like, yeah, you had some excess talent there or some places you can afford to give up something to get a starting pitcher, which you needed desperately. And you aren't going to get to a wild card spot at all unless you get another starting pitcher, period. Whether it's Dunn that comes back and he's fantastic, and I know that he's expected back sometime in early August. I don't know when Sheffield's expected back, but say he comes back and manages to write a little bit of what he was doing. Either way, you needed someone. So, you know, acquiring Tyler Anderson, bringing him in, obviously not part of this trade. They seem to really like Abraham Toro, who, to his credit, Curtis, what does he have, four home runs in four games or just
in
the last three?
Yeah, four straight games with a home
obviously
run.
Obviously two with the Astros. But
two against the Astros.
And then two against.
I mean, look, the Mariners, the optics of this trade, I think, are far worse than the actual outcome of this trade. Brent Stecker made a good point yesterday on Twitter, basically saying, look, Abraham Toro and Joe Smith have given the Mariners positive contributions since coming over. Toro has hit the two home runs. Joe Smith pitched an inning of relief on, what was it, Tuesday night following the trade. What can you say about Kendall Graveman and the Astros and what they got back? Look, the Astros got Rafael Montero back in that trade, too. I don't think that makes the Astros bullpen any better than what it was prior to the trade. Look, maybe that's just my hate for Rafael Montero, but I'm glad he is Houston's problem and no longer the Mariners.
There's the voice in our headline rewrite intro that's extra, extra, like the sound of like a 1920s little boy, and someone asked if it was me. Next.
Headline rewrites.
Aaron Rodgers made his first comments to the Green Bay media on Wednesday after arriving to Packers camp this week. What is the real headline?
I'll keep this one Jeopardy themed for you, Curtis.
Thank you.
Take uncomfortable conversations for 1,000, Alex.
Ooh.
I actually, you know what? I make fun of Aaron Rodgers a lot because it's just low-hanging fruit. You're so accomplished. You're so talented. And if I'm being honest, one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch, especially when I was a bit younger. He gives us a lot of material, though. He makes it easy. I didn't mind the press conference, though. Like, I kind of respected his candor.
What I don't understand is when athletes get up in front of a crowd like that and speak all the truth that they have.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, well, hey, wait, hey now. That's a little too much. Why are you showing us how the sausage is made?
Right.
We would kill to have every single athlete talk that way in every single press conference. It would make these press conferences all the more worthwhile.
Imagine.
Yeah, imagine if Russell Wilson got up in front of the Seattle media and Bob Condotta asked him a question, about the Seahawks.
Yeah, shout out, Bob.
Yeah, and the Seahawks offense. And Russ is like, you know what? I'm just not feeling the offense right now.
It'd be the entire show, three-hour show. Well, and all of us would love more insight into the inner workings of things. And, that whole don't want to see how the sausage is made thing also helps you understand a bit more. And frankly, I think would help people empathize a bit more with the business of football and some of what players go through, the bits that you don't see. You can think that Aaron Rodgers is pretentious, and to be frank, he kind of is. From the outside, he certainly seems that way a little bit. He's also one of the best in the game, and I appreciated him saying that he didn't feel like that relationship was there with ownership and felt a bit slighted by it.
Now, when he says ownership, does he mean the entire city of Green Bay? Because
that's who
owns the Packers.
Yeah, because what I'm hearing is Aaron Rodgers wants to fight everyone in Green Bay.
He's walking into a butcher shop and
hey, thanks for Jordan Love.
Daryl the Butcher is like, hey, Aaron, how's it going?
Yeah.
It's like, why'd you draft Jordan Love over me? It's like, I didn't have a say in it, man.
Look,
I can get you some pastrami.
Yeah. Do you want it or not?
Yeah.
Next.
Headline Rewrite.
I like that we think Aaron Rodgers is going to the butcher shop in Green Bay on his
own. I think he could be. I remember Olivia Munn saying that she went into random... She would talk about that. She'd be like, it's weird being in L.A. and you can't go anywhere without people taking pictures, and then you're in Green Bay, which feels like an entire neighborhood. It feels like the stadium is in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and you just walk wherever. Like, you go into the butcher, you go into a restaurant.
Stars, they're just like us.
They're just like us.
The Kraken made their first big agency splash, signing star goalie Philip Grubauer to a 6-year, $35 million deal. What's the real headline?
Are you sitting down for this one? Everyone sit down, because I have news that's going to rock your world. It'll shock NHL fans everywhere, but it appears that a GM of a professional hockey team knows more than they do.
Wild, right?
I know.
A wild concept. Because...
You know, I make fun of a lot of the Seahawks moves, but I will admit... And I'll admit, it's tough for me to admit this, that maybe John Schneider knows more than me.
Crazy.
For now, I feel that way.
Think about the conversations that we were having heading into the expansion draft. Carey Price made available. This guy's a future Hall of Famer. Oh, of course you draft him, right? This is a big name to add to your team. But no, Ron Francis stands pat. He goes and drafts Chris Drieger, a very capable backup goalie. They pass on Carey Price. And then in free agency, they get a younger, cheaper, better, and healthier goalie in Philip Grubauer for half the cap price that Carey Price was going to be. About $6 million compared to the $10.5, $11 million that Carey Price is going to make. Just an unbelievable way that Ron Francis has addressed that position, the most important position on the ice, especially for an expansion team. Tip of the cap to him. Tip of the cap to the Kraken front office for getting that deal done yesterday. This was the number one goalie available in free agency, and the Kraken had the most money of any team to work with. Just an incredible job by them.
Were you initially disappointed that they didn't take Price? Because I know some people, obviously he waived his no movement clause to protect their other goalie, I think Jake Allen or something.
Yeah.
And his deal was going to be a real issue. I mean, they were gambling, making the bet that, he's got a lingering injury and he's got a huge deal. And even though he is one of the best, maybe you won't make this gamble. The Kraken obviously didn't. Were you shocked when they didn't or disappointed?
Maybe a little bit disappointed, especially after seeing how much cap space they had to play with. It was like, really, you couldn't fit in a guy making $10 million a year
right
when you had $30 million of cap space left over. But seeing the ensuing moves, and then, by the way, didn't even mention this, they flipped their third-string goalie, Vitek Vanacek, back to the Washington Capitals, got a 2023 second-rounder for him. Wow. What are we doing here, complaining about not signing Carey Price anymore? When you manage to get the best goalie available in free agency, a second rounder, and you've got a pretty decent backup.
There are three things that I know, Curtis. Number one, I brought a lunch today, but I already ate it.
Okay.
And I'm going to regret that decision in about 2 hours.
It's hot out here. You're going to need some food.
I'm disappointed. Number two, that Groz, the conductor of the Dare to Dream Express, might have some strong words to say about the Mariners' recent trade, sending Kendall Graveman to, no big deal, just the best team in your division. Number three, that we heard from Jerry DePoto this morning about a little more info, a little more insight behind why he made the trade. All those things, except for my lunch, are coming your way in just a few minutes. We're going to hear from Graz first, and then we're going to hear everything Jerry DePoto had to say about the Mariners' latest trades. Do not go anywhere. This is Jake and Stacey live from Seahawks training camp.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey
live from the sidelines at Seahawks training camp.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Now here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
We are live from Seahawks training camp. Our training camp coverage presented by Precor Home Fitness. It's already getting hot, you guys, out at the VMAC. Joining us right now, though, taking a break from Seahawks for a little Mariners conversation, the Graz, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Graz, I was thinking of you, conductor of the Dare to Dream Express, when the Mariners made this trade, a very controversial trade. How do you feel about it today, and is that any different from how you felt about it immediately following the news?
Nope, didn't like it then, don't like it now, and wished I hadn't done it, and I was sorry to see it happen. I think it really, you took a team that had a lot of momentum going, and you kind of took it away from them, and I still to this moment here don't really understand the whole point of the trade.
Graz, when you look at the moves the Mariners have made in comparison to what the A's did yesterday, picking up Starling Marte, and then also what the Yankees did, picking up Joey Gallo, does that maybe firm your stance more on this trade? Because, I mean, Tyler Anderson, Joe Smith, and Abraham Toro, they are not Starling Marte or Joey Gallo.
It's not so much that. And Abraham Toro, Curtis might wind up being a good player. It's the trading of Graveman that makes no sense to me. He's a key part of your bullpen. He's a key part of your pitching staff. He's a key leader in your clubhouse. 0.82 ERA, 10 saves. You trade him to the team that you're chasing. I mean, look, they may have some other moves up their sleeve that'll make a lot of sense. But in this case, I just in general don't understand. Look, here's my theory on trading at the deadline. You trade prospects for guys to add to your major league staff and your major league team. You don't add by subtraction. Now they got to find a replacement for Kendall Graveman. That's going to be very difficult then. A lot of guys out there with a 0.82 ERA and 30 appearances this year? I don't know that they'll find that guy. So I think that the clubhouse reacted the way that they did because they felt like they got punched in the gut, and I still think the guys feel that way, and I think it's too bad.
We're going to be playing this sound in about 15 minutes, Graz, but Jerry DePoto talked about them kind of running the line, the balancing act between building for next year and the year after and then also trying to win now. The problem is that feels mostly impossible. Like, it feels like you're not going to add anyone to really help you this year without giving up some of your future, and you aren't going to add to your future significantly. Not that you need to with all your prospects, but if you give up a big prospect, that'll take away from that. So I kind of wonder, like, is there someone, a prospect you would have given up? Do you think that people, knowing the Mariners farm system is deep, are just asking for way too much? I mean, what do you think's going on where they felt like they had to do this trade?
I think the discussion, Stacey, has got to be, do you think you can win it this year? Do you want to win it this year? Are you going to take advantage of the opportunity that you've got staring in front of you? Do you believe that this is a young team that's kind of caught fire? Do you believe that this is a group that maybe more than the sum of their parts, that they may have some sort of X-factor chemistry thing going that can make a magical September run? That's the question you got to be asking, and if that's the answer, then you take the shot. It's 20 years not going to the playoffs. Now, I know that's not Jerry DePoto's fault. He hasn't been here all 20 years, but you haven't even gone to the postseason. Ask the Kansas City Royals if it was worth it to get to a one-game playoff. When they got there, they managed to get to the World Series. You can't have any success long-term until you get to the postseason, and to me, the job one for this organization has got to be to get to the postseason. And by the way, when you trade for rent-a-player type deals, you're not normally giving up the key guys in your farm system for that. So I think that the question needs to be, did you believe you had something special this year? I think in the clubhouse they believe that they had something special this year, and I'm not so sure they feel that way anymore. They gave up 19 runs the next two games. And I understand it was Houston, and they're very, very good, and we'll see with Texas up next and on the road what it looks like. But it just was a disappointing day for me.
Yeah, the trade didn't really make any sense to me. And Jerry Dipoto himself said it probably doesn't make any sense by itself, which is when you start to get a little nervous. Like, well, I hope the other shoe drops the way you want it to. Otherwise, right. You're kind of stuck in limbo with a trade that doesn't make sense for fans or the general manager. I'm not sure if you read Ryan Divish's article in the Seattle Times where he interviewed a lot of players off the record about their feelings. It just had some pretty damning stuff about Jerry Dipoto. There was one line saying that, you know, I don't know if it was the front office or him, or that he's one of those guys who just plays fantasy baseball, basically, not literally, but makes moves maybe callously in the front office. And I don't know if, you know, any GM is that different. But, man, it's hard not to feel like he just wasn't working with any deal of faith with the clubhouse or with fans. And I don't really blame either for that.
Well, I kind of think, look, I mean, I'm not so sure general managers, and we all saw Moneyball, they can't be best friends if they're going to trade you, right? That's what Brad Pitt said in that movie. But my point is this: if you're a Mariner player, this year started with your team president, you know, saying some things about not wanting to win and not trying to win. And you know, Kevin Mather wound up getting released for that. But, you know, we all know that he said it and everyone heard it. And then you flash forward to July and here you are in the middle of a, you know, you're in the pennant race. You feel like you're in it. You're trading your best closer, your best reliever, arguably, I think, probably no argument, your best reliever, to the team that you're chasing in the standings. So, you know, I can see how there's wondering there. Look, I remember in 95, one of the biggest things Jay Buhner told me this several occasions that happened was the Mariners traded for Andy Benes. Not that Andy Benes was necessarily great guns. He was okay for them, and he had some good starts. He wasn't terrific. You know, the team did it because of Randy Johnson on the mound. But that move by the front office showed the players that the front office believed in them. This trade by the front office does not show the players that the front office believes in them. I don't know how, if I'm a player, I can take it to mean anything but they don't believe in us. So, you know, that's just, you know, players are going to be that way, and that's understandable. It's the manager's job then to make sure they play hard. And look, they're paid professionals. They're going to play hard. But, you know, I go back to that statement that was not a move that made the players feel like you were playing for this year and you were playing to win now. And as Kyle Seager has said, at some point, you got to try to win.
Graz, we heard today from Jerry Dipoto also say that Jake Fraley and Kyle Lewis are expected to return within the next couple of weeks to this lineup. How much do you think the return of those two bats to the Mariners offense will impact their decision-making over the next couple of days as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, it's always better to add by not having to do anything. And look, I would put Marco Gonzalez in that thing too. I mean, you had a 1-5 pitcher with a 6+ ERA, now looking like the Marco Gonzalez of the last couple of years. You didn't trade anything for that. So, you know, that is a good boost. And look, Kyle Lewis was Rookie of the Year last year. I mean, you'd like to be thinking you're adding a significant piece with him. And Fraley is to me, one of those ex-players. He makes big plays in the field. He just makes big plays all over. So I think that those are definitely positive things that they've got going for them. Guys, you don't have to trade anything for that are going to boost your team. And I'm really hopeful, fingers crossed, that Kyle Lewis has a chance to show what he showed last year. If you can get some of that performance from Kyle Lewis in September, you're going to be a very interesting team.
You know, one last thing, and it's not about the trades, but Graz, it sure was nice personally to see Servais get real fired up about this team. I mean, whether or not the front office believes they can win now, it sure seems like Servais does.
Yeah, it made me long for the old days. In fact, I tweeted out an old Lou Piniella tirade just for the old times, because you know, those were that's exactly what players feel, Stacy, is that the manager's got their back when they do that. So, you know, I thought Scott Servais had enough, was fed up, and I think it feeds into, you know, what do they play him 12 more times this year? It should be some very interesting ball games with Houston coming up.
Hey, my dream scenario is that no matter the record, you get some kind of rivalry, like a deep rivalry going with the Astros, where, you know, they start to kind of hate us too. I hate the idea of Astros fans being like, we're not worried. I want Astros fans to really want to beat us, just to stick it to us. I think that'd be pretty fun.
Oh,
all
agree
right.
With you.
He is the Graz. Thanks so much for talking these trades with us, Graz. We appreciate the candor.
Thanks, Graz.
Have fun out there.
Bye. All right. Coming up next, we're going to play you guys some sound from Jerry Dipoto, and we'll see if we can talk to Seahawks linebacker Jordan Brooks. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Live from the sidelines at Seahawks training camp.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
Now here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino, and we are live from Seahawks camp. Going to keep having a little bit of a Mariners conversation, though, and we are waiting on linebacker Jordan Brooks to join us after the Seahawks finish with their mid-morning walkthrough. Also, before I forget, you guys, we're taking you around the diamond, thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Logan Gilbert takes the mound Friday night for the Mariners in their series opener against the Rangers. First pitch is going to be at 5.05 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Speaking of the Mariners, Curtis, you, me, and Jake have been texting each other really for several days in a row, all caps, lots of shocking reaction to what was a very controversial
paragraph-long text.
Paragraph-long text, lots of ellipses being used. So I'll start with just the basics of the trade. It starts with this one. After an incredible, improbable comeback win over the Astros, fireworks at the end of the night, a grand slam to cap it off. It was unbelievable. Up, taking the wind out of your sails, because the Mariners traded Kendall Graveman and Rafael Montero, your personal favorite, to the Astros. And in return, they received 24-year-old switch hitter and infielder Abraham Toro. That's the real piece of the trade. And then Joe Smith to kind of add back to the bullpen. Literally any old guy.
Joe Smith,
37-year-old reliever. Now, what we know is that DePoto, who spoke to reporters afterwards, said, well, the plan is to improve this year, and they still want to make more trades very soon. And Jerry DePoto this morning with Danny Gallant had a bit more to say. So take a listen. Cut number four, this is him talking about the reaction he saw from players to the trade.
A little surprised that it took people by surprise. You know, we have been talking about this in just this way for quite some time, you know, on this show and in most of our connection with the public. So I don't know that it should be a shocking move. We went in with the intent to find ways to make our present club better while addressing, you know, our future needs as well. And there are still multiple days left in this trade deadline. You know, this is one snapshot in what we hope is a bigger picture.
To clarify, DePoto probably meant surprised that fans were surprised as opposed to just players. That would be a little callous.
Yeah, I also think he is surprised, though, at the reaction within the clubhouse.
Maybe.
I think.
Were you surprised?
Was I surprised? I mean, just based off the way we've heard guys talk about the kind of person that Kendall Graveman is and sort of the clubhouse leadership role he took on, I'm not too surprised at the reaction of the clubhouse based off of just how glowingly he was talked about in the, you know, 2 years he was wearing a Mariner uniform.
Yeah. Now, we also have Jerry DePoto talking about the players' reaction specifically here in cut number five.
Caught off guard would probably be the wrong way to reference it. Now, part of how I feel or how I work is to give people room to feel the way they want to feel. And, you know, we're living in a particularly emotional time. And, you know, and Kendall's a great guy. He's a particularly emotional guy. So I'm not entirely shocked that there would be an emotional response to his departure. So my general take on it is, you know, give people the space to work it out on their own.
Wow, look at all these famous beat writers walking by the 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, getting in the way of us.
Yeah.
And Jordan Brooks. Here.
Wow. All right. Now, Jordan Brooks, linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks, joining us right now. We'll get back to that Jerry DePoto sound in just a moment. Jordan, first of all, how are you? Happy to be back at camp?
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, yesterday was the first day of year two. Came out here, got loose a little bit. Practice wasn't too long, but it's good to be back, see all the guys, and just ready to keep going.
Now, I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but I'm going to have to repeat it. It is the first year that we're watching a camp right now without KJ Wright. We don't know yet whether he's going to come back. Is there any kind of lasting advice he gave you specifically that's been sticking with you in your head in camp?
Yeah, I talked to him not too long ago. Just tell me just to keep working, you know. Just keep preparing the right way, studying, staying in my playbook, watching film, and obviously taking care of my body.
Jordan, this is your second camp in the NFL, and obviously last year there was so much going on with, you know, COVID and just an unprecedented offseason for so many. What's the biggest difference you've noticed in your second camp as opposed to your first camp?
The playbook. last year's first day, I didn't know what was going on, you know. Yesterday, I felt a lot more comfortable. Made some mistakes, but that's going to happen along the road. But I feel a lot more comfortable just knowing the plays.
So have you had any younger players ask you, like, what's this? And you're like, whoa, suddenly I can help.
Yeah, we had some new guys like Nate Evans and John Radigan. You know, they come up for advice, you know, anything dealing with the playbook. And it feels good to be able to help them, you know, just knowing what to do now.
Jordan, last year there was a game that stood out to me from you, and that was the second Rams game you guys played where you made so many stops at the goal line there. When you had a performance like that under your belt as a rookie, what did that do for your confidence at the end of the season and maybe going into year two here?
It felt good just to kind of get my feet wet a little bit, you know, come up big for my team, my defense. That felt good. It was a confidence boost for sure. Definitely momentum coming into this year too. So like I said, I'm just ready to get going and show you guys what I got.
Now, I'm going to ask a weird question, but we're all athletes here. Some of us more accomplished than others. Like, you know, Jordan, you are a professional football player. I, you know, did swim team in high school. Varying degrees of athleticism here. But Dave Wyman, a former linebacker, I know you've interviewed with him before. He loves you. I mean, he'll stand for like any linebacker ever. But he always talks about just like how ready you look to play at all times, like just physically ready, and can't stop talking about like Jordan Brooks looks like he does more squats and lifts more weights than any linebacker I've seen before. You have to give us just a little insight for anyone listening. What's the routine? What's the routine been this offseason?
Obviously, you know, working out, but I probably have to give it to my dad. I think it's all just more just genetics. If you got to look at my dad at my age, you'll see why.
You see it.
So I would say genetics, and then obviously, you know, staying in shape and training.
Jordan, I've noticed something with the guys this camp. All the different jersey numbers this year because the NFL relaxed those rules. You wear 56 right now. In college, you wore number 20. Did you think about changing the jersey number at all this offseason?
Yeah. Well, my freshman year in college, I wore 20, and then the last 3 years, I wore number 1. I thought about changing it back to number 1, but I kind of wanted to stick with 56. I felt like it was more appropriate. You know, I'm in a league now. Mm-hmm. It's a different ball game, so I felt like that just fits the role and the position better.
Well, I would imagine if it were me, I'm just thinking, like, you're starting a new chapter, a new story, and you're like, I want to create a legacy for this number now, exactly. And I want this to be me. Curtis, he has to get in a Big 12 question.
Yeah. You being a Texas Tech Red Raider, what do you think about Oklahoma and Texas here flirting with the SEC? Like, You gotta have some hard feelings towards those two schools, I would imagine.
Yeah, obviously, you know, I don't like those two teams. But I think it's a good thing. We can get them out of the way.
There we go.
And then maybe Texas Tech can, you know, rise to the top, and we don't have to worry about them no more.
Jordan, I just, for us to be honest, the three of us being friends, I have to be very honest and let you know that in our preview, you were one of our most 15 most important Seahawks for the season, and we had nothing but good things to say. If you hear it, I did slip up, and I accidentally said that you went to Texas A&M, and I understand if you end the interview right now, I'm so sorry.
Oh, man. You know, there's a funny story about Texas A&M. I really wanted to go there. It was at an A&M in Texas that I really wanted to go, and neither offered. Texas A&M offered literally the day of signing day, and I was like, oh, nah. It was kind of. I was kind of like.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. They're lost completely. Who in the locker room gives you the hardest time about, like, college rivalries?
Oh, Quandre Diggs, for sure.
He seems like someone that talks a lot of trash.
Do you give him the horns down?
All the time.
Yes.
Thank you.
All the time. I got to do it whenever I can. You know, he's always got that Texas versus Texas Tech rivalry thing going on. So I'll give it to Quandre for sure.
Now, he talks a lot of trash on Twitter. Is he that way in the locker room too?
Yeah. Same guy you see on Twitter.
Man.
Same guy in the locker room. But you love him, though. It's all fun. It's all love. You know, if he's not talking about you, then he probably don't like you. So
that's
it's
fair.
Kind of a good thing.
All right. Well, Jordan, we can't wait to see you out there. You look great. It's been one day, but I know fans have all the faith in the world. And we can't wait to see your second season in Seattle. Thanks so much for taking the time
thank
with us,
you,
man. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, and that was Seahawks linebacker Jordan Brooks, now in his second year with Seattle, former first-round pick, out here to make an impact on the defense for the Seahawks.
Just like yesterday, he was out here for the first time. Now he's the wily veteran of the group.
That's exactly right. And now reporters, we're probably going to get a couple other beat writers coming up. Did you feel really famous when I was waved at by Tim Booth of the Associated Press?
Michael Sean Dugar.
Michael Sean Dugar of The Athletic.
Wow.
Famous levels. All right, so I have my own takeaways from training camp that I had yesterday. I'll tell you what you need to know, what I saw, and then we're going to get back into some of that Jerry DePoto sound for you guys, since I know you got to hear it. That's all coming your way next.